What I'm going to be talking about today is a project that's in process. So I would like to have the kind of beautiful things that we've seen from Tricia and from the previous talk to show you, but what I've got instead is a bunch of stuff that's hammered together that's been thinking about possibly not quite wearables, but some of the space and some of the themes that go with thinking about what is a wearable technology, what are the objects and artifacts, and what are the systems that they operate within. The project itself is one that's been ongoing for about a year now under Nesta funding, and it's looking at critical and speculative design of sexual healthcare, both in terms of objects and in terms of systems itself. This image itself is one that I used in a previous talk talking about this project, which is a picture of an ortolan, a little bird who the manner of eating it is seen to be so abhorrent and against God that the French gourmands who picked up the habit from the Romans in the 20th century decided they could only eat this when they had a linen napkin placed over their heads to hide their face from God and from the people in the restaurant as well, because these are little birds, you end up spitting out bones everywhere as well. So this is kind of a starting point for the project itself, which developed from my own background. I originally came from the wet sciences, from biochemistry, moved more into kind of science and technology studies, so more kind of science, technology, anthropology, sociology. And then for any of you who've seen Mad Max Fury Road, ended up taking kind of a hard left across the desert and veered sideways very heavily into kind of more design and anthropology, but still kind of dragging the massive war rig of policy and sociology with me at the same time. So this is a very bad metaphor to describe kind of how this all holds together. The project itself was developed a residency at Lighthouse Arts last year, where they ran a residency program, and they took what was actually felt to me quite a brave thing of bringing in someone who was more associated with the social scientists than necessarily with either the artists or technologists who have been in other similar types of laboratories and residencies. We developed the project there. I then folded it into my research cooperative, Strange Telemetry, that I run alongside of the work that all the rest of us do. So this is myself, Tobias Revel, and Justin Pickard. And this is a research cooperative that looks at how kind of the messy social, anthropological, cultural, economic side of technology, not necessarily the technical systems, but the social and economic and material systems around them as well. So that's what we do. So, the project. So my starting point for this was trying to think about what might critical and speculative design of sexual healthcare look like. It felt like that there was something here that kind of tapped into some of the things that people have been talking earlier about wearables, in terms of kind of the technologies and how they get used and who gets to use them and in what context. But when you're engaging with sexual healthcare, you're automatically starting to deal with a whole field of wider things that start to, by its very nature, slam you very hard away from just thinking about this in a technical sense. So you have to deal with the cultural stuff, you have to deal with the social stuff, you have to deal with the emotional stuff because of what it is. Now, my background, my doctoral research several years ago, was looking at how stigma shaped the industrial dynamics of the pornography industry. This idea that what happens if you've got an industry which is so heavily stigmatized, it starts to shape the business models it uses, it starts to shape how hiring practices take place, it starts to shape basically everything you know about that industry suddenly kind of gets warped in a really weird way that you might not get for a more socially legitimate industry. So you can't just think about this in a very neutral, bland way. You have to think about this in terms of what this other kind of this social force bears to bring on it. My words is quite a cheeky prop for this, but I got the hard copies for my book at the weekend, and this is the first time I've been able to get off a book. So this is the hardcover book, which is monstrously expensive because it's an academic output, but it's out at the moment, and I'm very excited. So stigma offers a lot to think about in terms of design, in terms of what happens when you've got a person or an object or a job or an identity which for some reason is considered to be socially deviant or embarrassing or just something which is really shameful, something which is hard to deal with. When you've got that thing in play, you can't just think of the object, the thing, the person, the system itself as socially neutral. You have to start thinking about what the social force it bears on it. So for me, sexual healthcare is like right at the heart of that. That was the first thing we were thinking about in designing things around sexual healthcare, is like, what is this personal aspect of it? So in the research we've done in thinking about how do we design around sexual healthcare, This aspect of being embarrassing, being stigmatised, being shameful has come up a lot, again and again and again. It's something that the sexual health prep providers we've talked to have identified as just a really massive hindrance to the type of work they do, that the type of materials they produce have to be simultaneously subtle enough so that if you take them home, that you don't necessarily know what they are if you lay them out on the kitchen table. If you've got an object, it has to look neutral. If you're dealing with someone, you have to be able to engage with them in a personal way. This is non-judgmental and yet can provide the information they need. This is really, really bloody hard. And it also has to be tailored as well. It's, when I say personal, it's not just in terms of stigma and shame, but it's also in terms of individual stuff, in terms of who you are, who you might be sleeping with, the kind of type of the life stage you're at. Do you want something that will prevent contraception? Do you want something that will encourage reproduction? Do you want something that is about disease prevention? Do you want something that is just about mental health care? So all these things get tailored and tailored and tailored and tailored and tailored down in a way that is, in a design sense, offers a lot of challenges. And it's very similar to the type of design for one stuff that Sarah Hendren at Olin College talks about. So that's the personal part. But there's also a material aspect of sexual health care as well. So there's the material of the what you're getting itself, whether this is in terms of prophylactics, whether it's in terms of something like an IUD, whether it's in terms of even just a leaflet that's telling you things. There's something that's always material because it's bound up with the body. And this can be mediated by digital systems, whether you think, for example, of trying to get sexual health care information through an app or through a website, but also at some stage it can come back to the body itself. But there's also materiality in terms of what you're designing too. So what we've got here is the Dalkon Shield, which was a car crash in terms of sexual healthcare design from the 1960s, I think. For anything that's designed to go into the body, and this is kind of why I think it's fascinating when we think about this in terms of wearables, the biomaterial is vital, because if there's something which is internal, which might be there for a long period of time, this thing has to be able to kind of sit there and stay, whether it's in terms of an IUD, whether it's in terms of an implant, whether it's in terms of condoms, even whether it's in terms of the pill. There's something about, this aspect of it is critical. And the Dalkon Shield was designed in such a way that the materiality of it was not quite a second thought, but it was really badly designed. It's like, it's kind of one of those designed for failure or designed for mass horror kind of things. The string you've got here was designed in such a way, and I can get more details afterwards, that it massively increased the likelihood of infection because of where bacteria were likely to grow on it as well. And if you get a sense of how those little jabs went in, this was designed for working class women who their designers at the time and the medical professionals thought that, you know, understandably, you want to provide a form of contraception. That means you can just put it in, forget about it, go about your life. What they didn't think about was how you'd get it out. So if you take a little look at that, that should give you some sort of idea of what the problems were there. So horror aside, materiality in terms of wearables, in terms of sexual healthcare, is vitally important. And in a sense, like pornography, like sexual healthcare, it's not even that specific thing that is the interesting thing. It's what it tells us about everything else. So those are the objects. But the second thing that fascinates me about sexual healthcare, again, coming back to the previous research I've done on pornography, are the systems that they work in. So when I started doing the research on sexual healthcare, one of the starting points for this had actually been thinking about climate change and global collapse. I've been doing a lot of work around more in terms of shipping supply chains, like air supply chains. And one of the things that had come out of that was, well, what happens if there's ever a point where there's going to be such an enormous, it's just not even a collapse, but a shift geographically in terms of the effects of climate change on transport, that means it's going to be very, very difficult to get things like condoms, like the pill, like other other forms of pharmaceutical products. And this is actually something that the UN takes care of quite spectacularly. So if you go and have a look through, which you should, some of the kind of UN and World Health Organization stuff about how sexual health products get manufactured, unlike other kind of regional systems of innovation where you might, say, want to get your electronics from one part of Asia or your cars from Germany, the factories to produce sexual healthcare products are dotted fairly equally around the world. So the space between supply chains is closed. So you can reasonably always have them. But there's a second thing here as well that also comes up with the infrastructures of what these things are that we're working with. I adored the human heart. There's kind of this idea of kind of making knowable the materiality of infrastructures delights me. And it's something that with the sexual healthcare project I wanted to think about as well. There's, oh gosh, how to think about this. coming back to the idea of kind of the Internet of Things and of wearables, there's often been, it feels like, a lot of focus on that very shiny front end, on that thing that has that kind of a lot of user experience designed into it, designed to be frictionless, designed to be, you know, beautiful. And actually, what you're, particularly for a connected object, what you're actually designing is the start of a very long chain that goes into a much larger system. I do a podcast with my colleagues called Gin and Innovation, and the last one we did was actually at an Internet of Things conference in Berlin. And my colleague Tobias said it beautifully. He said, when you're buying something from the Internet of Things, you're not buying the object, you're buying the pipes. You're buying the thing that gets you into that larger infrastructure. And so for something like sexual healthcare, things like, well, you're buying, you're getting something which is like the object, but actually you have to engage with this massive infrastructure of supply chains and materials that go with it as well. You can't just think about what that thing is too. So all these things bundled together. Right. Finally, rapid dash through critical aspects of design. I presume that some of you know about this and some of you don't, so I'll take it loosely and take questions. This is something that feels like it, Renaissance isn't the right word because it hasn't gone away anywhere, but it's something that in the past couple of years feels like it's on this massive surge where suddenly a lot of people are talking about the idea of, say, Julian Blücher's design fictions, kind of ideas that can be cheaply prototyped to give an idea of how this thing operates without having to go into full-stack manufacturing, or critical and speculative design to kind of take the skills of designers away from a more industry client-facing practice and using them as a way to create things that engage with some kind of political, social, thoughtful reckoning about the objects and designs themselves. So the charge has been led by this of Dunn and Raby, who are currently, but soon to be formerly of the RCA in London. At Strange Telemetry, we've done a lot of work around this. This was a piece that we did for the Cabinet Office, where we were using speculative design as a way to think about what aging populations might, how they might engage with the next 20 or 30 years by kind of offering objects and scenarios to think about. And again, we did this project just before government went into purdah with the election, so we just can talk about it now, which is quite exciting. But it's kind of a curious thing of where you're designing something not necessarily to be functional, but to create engagement and thought. And that kind of puts into quite an odd, a fuzzy space, particularly when you're thinking about where is this object sited? Is it in a gallery? Is it in another setting? What is it actually doing? And with the other proviso that, this is a design department, design is difficult, fiction is bloody difficult. So it's really easy to produce really, really bad critical designs. It's very, very difficult to make really beautiful ones, really, and what effectiveness means as well. So a lot of stuff that I've been thinking about in this space is what does work and what does work even, mean for this. Now, for sexual health, there's not much in the way of critical and speculative design, which is, again, one of the other starting points for this. The nearest thing I found is something by a designer called Ronan Condition, who did this little thing called the Bearina. And the thing he wanted to kind of like lock in on this was that IUDs are very expensive, which they are. They can be very difficult to access in certain healthcare systems, which they are. So he made this little thing, which is a 3D printed IUD, and you can see how big it is by that an American cent there, which he kind of 3D printed to show, look, you can make them cheaply, you can take them outside of the supply chain, and you can make them bespoke. And these are a lot of the things that I've been thinking about when I've developed the project. But it's a curious project, and my feelings of this are, it's very difficult, I feel it's very difficult for this particular project to unbundle between this thing as a point of consideration, as an object for thought, and something which might be taken seriously, as something that might be downloaded and printed. And bearing in mind everything we said about how important biomaterials are, this is something that's quite critical here. So I wanted to kind of see, what would happen if you engaged with forms of critical design, but also from everything I've done from stigma research, you have to engage deeply. You have to do deep dive anthropological or ethnographic research. You have to work with, whichever communities you're working with to try and kind of pull rich material out of there rather than it being some hovering thing. So this is as much of a test of, is this going to work? It might not. It might be a terrible design choice, but we're going to see how it goes. So the first part of the what we did was a foresight analysis. I worked with a professional foresight analyst called Scott Smith, and we did basically haul through in the next 20 years what might it look like as a way to just start laying down definitions and kind of like points on the landscape that if we were doing this in a future-facing way, and not all speculative design has to be future-facing, it can be kind of parallel, what kind of things might you go for? So we started thinking about things like what might happen to supply chains, what might happen to water scarcity, what might happen to the social things. And there's obviously big differences between likeliness, prediction. Again, these are more kind of fuzzy points rather than definite predictions, but just things to think about and aim towards. And using those, we kind of pulled together various series of, not predictions, big firm stamp, not predictions, but just points to kind of think about if you're thinking about what might we speculate, what might be there rather than here. So again, things like water scarcity, things like one-time use, things like the use of electronics. We run then a series of co-design workshops with various different participants to bring in these different elements, and the workshops iterated throughout to see if we bring in elements both of kind of foresight aspects, but also of knowing about like personal experiences with sexual healthcare, what might they look like. We ran a prototype workshop at EMF Camp last summer, which is what we've got shown here, which is why it's in a tent. We ran a workshop for cisgendered women that were aged between, I think, 25 to 35. That was earlier in the year. And then we ran a workshop for trans and trans-identifying and queer youth in April of this year. And each of the workshops iterated and iterated down. And I've been doing kind of very, very small one-on-one workshops with straight-identified men as the kind of the next stage, as a way just to try and group out these different things. So from that, we've been getting kind of ideas of thinking about kind of very loosely exploding out kind of what kind of things exist in the sexual healthcare space, what kind of stuff can come with that if you're thinking about this personally. We're thinking about, you can't quite see this, but as a kind of a starting point for workshop, thinking about where is sexual healthcare for you now? What does that mean to you? What do you engage with? Is it stuff like clinics? Is it something that's invisible that you don't talk to your friends about? Is it stuff that is object-based? Is it stuff that is engaged in very heavy power dynamics if you have to go and see a doctor? So kind of getting all these kind of characteristics of this is where we are now, and then kind of moving forward to thinking about, well, where might this be then? What kind of stuff might, you know, if you're pushing yourself, say, forward 10 years, what might that thread be to kind of carry you forward into some kind of future as well? Again, we've got bundles of material as well at the moment we're kind of working through. And with this and working with a number of designers, we're going to be producing a number of artifacts, hopefully in the next 6 weeks or so, that will then in themselves be kind of almost used as an iterative object for engaging in thinking about what sexual healthcare might look like, but also, again, the larger system. So to wrap up quickly, because Trisha's looking at me, right. Like I said, the sexual healthcare stuff is almost, it's a bit of smoke and mirrors. It's something that allows us to look more closely at the bigger issues around design in this space, and these are the things I'm interested in. Firstly, there's the Internet of Things wearable aspects of what objects are systems. A shiny, beautiful object is a gorgeous thing, but ultimately, particularly for these kind of devices, you're engaging in much larger systems of power and infrastructure. So what does that look like? How do you deal with it? Secondly, how do you engage with sites of deviance? Again, if you're doing any kind of work around stigma and deviance, you can't just scrape that off the surface and say, yeah, but we're just looking at the object or technology itself. That is the thing that comes first. It's a shaping thing. And thirdly, there's this idea of careful futures. This came up again and again in the workshops, that you can't just design something and say, well, there's going to be some grand optimistic future over there. So, for example, the women's workshop, because of the age of participants, the time horizon we were asking them to look forward to was broader the time horizon around fertility, and if they were going to have children, if that was the situation they were in, that's what they would be looking towards. So there's kind of a lot of stuff around what is this are you bringing optimism into this design process, or are you offering something a bit more nuanced than that? Like I said, work in progress. We'll hopefully next couple months have stuff out of this, but thank you very much.